This is a Christian Science extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org. The title of this prayer treatment is Mind Reveals Individuality of Man. This prayer treatment is intended to benefit earnest seekers of truth within all humanity. Whatever seeming mental or physical problems that come to thought and are related to the topic will be verbalized, and a suggested way to treat it will be included, along with how the system of divine metaphysics discovered by Mary Baker Eddy can be applied to the specific situation. After almost 40 years of revelation, Mary Baker Eddy provided this statement in the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, by Mary Baker Eddy, on page 146. She says that divine metaphysics has now been reduced to a system, and this enables the learner to demonstrate healing. On page 330 of the same book, she indicates that there are 32 planks to the platform of the system of divine metaphysics, and that if those planks, which are really topics, are lived in both the letter and the spirit, that the infallibility of the system of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. In other words, there will be a healing that results from the application of the system of divine metaphysics to any particular ailment. The three introductory quotes to the textbook give us some guiding light on how we should be keeping in the forefront of our thought some very specific guidelines. The first quote are the words of Jesus. It states, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." The second quote, from Shakespeare, "There is nothing, either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." And the third quote, from Mary Baker Eddy, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." If we look at the messages that are tucked inside these quotes, it appears that we need to always be sure that we're seeking the truth. Our motive should not be healing, but advancement of understanding of truth. And if we do gain an understanding of truth, in proportion to what that understanding is, we will be freed in proportion from anything that appeared to be restricting the truth about ourselves or anyone that it is applied to. And Shakespeare is telling us that our thinking has a direct influence on our experience. And Mary Baker Eddy, in the third quote, is saying that if we understand what we're doing and we comply by living what we've understood, then there will be blessings. Because the laws of God are omnipresent and will benefit anyone who complies with those universal laws of God. One statement Jesus made that applies directly to this is that he said that I and my Father are one. And he also said, my Father is greater than I. This is what we want to emulate, being at one with God, always recognizing that God is the source and God is infinite, and we are a manifestation of God. And to the degree that we think, say, and do that is in alignment with the laws of God, the benefits will be realized. And it will not only touch on us, but on everyone that is affected by our presence. In other words, are we going to be a lighthouse and letting our light shine with what we are learning? Because only if we share by being an example will it be a benefit to us or anyone else. The very first rule in order to even think about approaching a spiritual method of healing is to cultivate a life of giving. Healing is really a result of transforming within our own consciousness our thoughts about reality. God is defined in the Bible as being the source of all existence, and that it is not new, because it states that there is nothing new under the sun. So truth has always existed. Reality has always existed. So it's a matter of us awakening to the truth that has always existed. It seems that one of the most advanced individuals in understanding what time is about is Frederick L. Rawson. And I say that because he was able to demonstrate healing back in time. The details are on the website, but in essence, if someone had a problem for 20 years, he could go back to when they were first aware that there was a problem and heal it effective at that time. Now, he doesn't say these words, but that seems like we should translate that to mean that from that time forward, everything was erased that was related to that problem. Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy performed instantaneous healings. And there are three others that we know of did as well. Frederick L. Rawson is one of them. Wentworth Winslow and Joel Goldsmith all had 15-minute schedules for their appointments, and at the end of 15 minutes, the healing was complete. So they all three were able to overcome the need for time to be required for healing. Time has nothing to do with healing. The only reason that there is not an instantaneous healing in any particular case is that the lack of understanding that there is no time did not exist within the individual with enough conviction to be able to eliminate the need for time to pass in order for the healing to be effective. Mary Baker Eddy defines God on page 465 as incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. That word infinite, as well as incorporeal, divine, and supreme, applies to all seven of the terms that apply to what God is. Those terms again are mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. Now, what does the title mean about individuality of man? We've mentioned that God is the one that reveals, or rather mind, which is one of the seven terms that defines God. And of course, that is not mind. It supposedly is related to a physical brain, but it is totally the opposite. It is a mind that is infinite, that is of the substance of spirit, not matter. It is not dictated to by a mortal mind, for it is the opposite. It is an immortal mind. Mary Baker Eddy defines mortal mind as being an oxymoron, because mind is not mortal, so there can be no mortal mind. Now, this, of course, is relating to reality versus theory. Mortal mind relates to a theory. But the truth is that mind is immortal and is of the substance of spirit, which is the opposite of matter. It's the opposite of the pulpy substance called brain. Shakespeare implies that thinking is outside of a physical limitation. So therefore, real thinking can only come from the one and only real mind. And as we understand more about the one and only real mind, which is immortal, then our dimension of a product, which means applying the intelligence of mind to a particular situation, removes all limitations, because mind is infinite. When we think about individuality of man, we need to realize that man is merely a generic term, but you and I are individuals. So the individuality of man means our unique reflection of the generic term man. And every single individual is unique. There are no duplicates, no identical twins or triplets or anything else. Every single one is unique. And a mother can tell. A mother knows the difference between ones that were labeled as being identical. Maybe most of us are not able to, unless we really know the people, and they probably will be able to tell there's a difference in many things, even if they appear to be the same. The one thing that enables God to be infinite is the same thing that enables a 7 in mathematics to be omnipresent. It's an idea. We can write down a 7 on a piece of paper, but we could burn the piece of paper, and that has no impact on the digits of mathematics. God is idea. God is not physical. In fact, the very first word in the definition that was recited says God is incorporeal. A seven is incorporeal. A beautiful music melody is incorporeal. You can't touch it. You can't see it. You can feel it. Feeling is one of the greatest ways to appreciate anything that is spiritual, and certainly a beautiful melody is not material. It is spiritual. It is reflecting the spiritual harmony of principle. A pianist is not a pianist if he doesn't perform his skill. We are not an individual, a unique individual of man, unless we act like it, unless we think about, unless we think like it, unless we do like it. Life is what brings forth the result of what has been learned. How are we living it? Think about the concept of birth. I recited one of the quotes from the Bible about that. It said, there's nothing new under the sun. Can there really be a birth if nothing is new under the sun? There can be a revelation. In fact, that's what an inventor does. An inventor reveals something that was not recognized previously. But it doesn't mean that it is new. It's only new to those who are not aware that it was in existence previously. Frederick L. Rawson states it this way. He says, when someone makes a new discovery, they're basically discovering a rearrangement of facts that were always true, but they're presented in a new form that was not recognized previously. But they're still based on facts. They're based on truth that was always true. Facts that were always true. Maybe one could consider it like painting something that changes the color or refreshes or renews the color. But what is underneath was not changed. Only the outward appearance is. Suppose that an individual, after birth, was given a label that was far from being perfect. Who is providing that label? Would it be a reflection of the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind? Could it be the thinking of mind? Here's a few of the words that define mind. Intelligence. Wisdom. Knows. Mind knows. Now, if mind is intelligence, and wisdom, and knows, does mind think? Why would mind think? It already knows. Mind provides thoughts, but it doesn't do any thinking because it already knows. It reveals what is already true. Now, there's only one substance in reality, and that is spirit. What is the opposite of spirit? Matter, which is true, which is real, which is godlike. spirit or matter? Spirit is invisible. It's transparent. Matter is opaque and not transparent. Could something opaque be infinite? Could something opaque be omnipresent? God is omnipresent. God is infinite. Could a label that is placed upon a newborn child, and of course that's to belief, because that's a material viewpoint, not a spiritual viewpoint, because the spiritual viewpoint, or let's say the spiritual fact, is that there's nothing new under the sun, and it's only a new revelation that is being recognized. The reality is that it did not come forth from matter, because ideas are all from mind. So if that newborn babe, which is called that in material terms, is alive, that life is from God. Because God, as mentioned in the definition, is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. So the life of everything that is perfect is from God. Everything. Your life, my life, everyone's life. The concept of life is from God, not from matter. The concept of matter is that it's born, it grows, it peaks out, deteriorates, turns into dust. If we want to experience life eternal, we can't do it based on matter. I read a quote recently, and it said that when you go around the corner, that's what we think of it here is at the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. In other words, when you are pass on, it's commonly referred to as death. We call it going around the corner so you can't be seen. It's common to call it pass on. When that happens, isn't that kind of proof that the body is not permanent? Because the body, the physical appearance, eventually disappears. In fact, that's what a skeleton is. It leaves the bones. But the bones eventually also disappear. If we want to focus on a material sense of life, then we are going to be very embedded in the thought about advancing, peaking out, and then ending. Even most people that believe that have a concept that the soul, and they think of that as being like the core of an individual, that goes on. Einstein made some very pertinent statements about this topic. He said that religion without science is blind, and that science without religion is lame. Now, he said this after studying the textbook by Mary Baker Eddy, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. He made these other statements about what he discovered after a thorough study of the textbook. He said, "Blessed art thou," referring to Mary Baker Eddy. because everything that is in this book, referring to the textbook, Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures, by Mary Baker Eddy. Imagine that, a man that devoted his professional life to trying to figure out things about matter, made such a revolutionary change in his concept about reality that he made that kind of a statement. Everything that is in this book. He also said, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. Now, she discovered it in 1866. So that would mean that if he was trying to call it to the year, that he was saying that in 1946. And that could very well be an accurate date, because he had a friend whose last name was Underwood, PhD in physics, and probably nuclear physics. And he was assigned to the Atomic Energy Commission by the U.S. government. And they were trying to figure out how to create an atom bomb. And we know what they did with it after they discovered how to do it. So they were trying to discover how to destroy at least a partial amount of civilization. And everyone on that team passed on, went around the corner, as a result of radiation, except for his friend, Dr. Underwood. Einstein was amazed that there was a survivor, and it was his friend. So he asked him, how in the world did you survive? Everyone else is gone. He told him very frankly, I'm a student of Christian Science. He apparently told him that he had studied it methodically, systematically, and scientifically, and that's what brought his healing. Think of those words. Methodically, systematically, and scientifically. It wasn't a casual it wasn't a casual survey of the book. Today, the word perusal generally refers to someone that takes a quick glance at something. But if you look up the definition of perusal, it means a thorough study. He obviously did a very thorough study, and that's exactly what Einstein did after he discovered the results that his friend had. Einstein had already known about Christian Science and kind of dabbled, but he didn't take a serious thought about it because his thought was still adjusting to it being the total opposite of what he had spent his life studying. But after talking to his friend and finding out that he was the only survivor of the group, and this is how he survived, and he was totally healed of the radiation, then Einstein said, man, I've got to check this out much more thoroughly. He attended the local church. He spent devoted time in the reading room, which is a reading room is like a library that each of the churches are supposed to have, and preferably in a business area of the city, so that individuals can walk in there without committing going into a church. So it's intended to be something in a public area so that all may feel free to attend it without making any obligation to attending the church. And that's where Einstein studied, in the reading room. Imagine that he would say, everything that is in this book. Getting back to the title and the concept of birth, consider thinking of birth as being a false representation of revelation, a false representation of revealing within consciousness a newness of an idea to one. And if one would look upon that new concept that is represented in something that is visible, is that any different than looking at a tree that someone had not seen? Or an animal? Or hearing music that was a beautiful melody that they had not heard before? They are all symbols, some visible and some invisible. Music is invisible, of course. A tree is visible. Beautiful flower. The aroma of a wonderful perfume or a flower. They are all symbols, some visible and some invisible, of what was always true. And that is beauty expressed in one way or another. Truth. The qualities of God being expressed in individual unique ways. John Philip Sousa composed music that were ideal for schools that wanted to play for entertainment between a sports event. That's different music than what Mozart composed. Different music than Gershwin. Different than anyone else. But he used the same principle of music, which, of course, if you know anything about music, it includes mathematics. You can't play an A and a B simultaneously and for it to sound harmonious. You can play an A and a C, and that can be very harmonious. You can't play an A and an A flat together. Some things are harmonious, and some are not. And that's why math is involved, to explain what is and what is not harmonious in music. Should one believe a label that is given based on a sense of matter to an idea of God? If a doctor says, this child has this problem and this problem and this problem, and therefore they're going to have this limitation and that limitation and this other limitation, should we believe it? If we believe in God, we better not believe it. Because that didn't come from God. I know of a situation where there was a child that experienced that exact thing. They were given a whole list of limitations because they were born with defects. They weren't supposed to be able to read or think. All kinds of limitations. And that family went to a Christian Science practitioner and said, what do we do? The practitioner said, the first thing you want to do is teach your child how to read. And that's exactly what they did. I mean, at a very young age, I don't know, two, three years old, the child loved to read. They bought a library of children's version of the classics. You know, the real classics, but they were written for children. And at a very young age, that child read the whole set. I don't know, it was like 25 or 30 books. Loved to read. They taught it how to read the lesson. Read the lesson every day. They said, well, why? If our daughter knows how to read, why can't it learn how to play the piano? They had a piano teacher that gave her lessons every day. Not once a week, every day. And at the end of about 2 years or a little more, somewhere around 2 or 3 years, the child could play anything up to 2 or 3 flats and sharps out of the hymnal. Every single song in the hymnal. I mean, there's what? 400 some songs, and everything up to 2 or 3 flats, that child could play. And I learned it in 2 or 3 years. I don't think I learned how to play the piano that well in 2 or 3 years. All of us in our family took piano lessons from the time we were in the first grade of school until the 12th grade. We took 1 hour a day to practice, and we took one piano lesson a week. This child learned how to play up to 2 or 3 flats and 2 or 3 sharps in a couple of years. It was given a limitation on balance. It says it'll be difficult to balance. I said, okay. Well, she knows how to play the piano, how to read. We're going to teach her how to ride a bicycle. Well, I think they did this before. So they taught her how to ride a bicycle. They taught her how to swim. She was swam like a fish. She loved acrobatics, cartwheels, all that kind of stuff. She was given a claim that included her bone structure, giving her a special look. The bone structure changed. The bone structure changed. She would carry on a conversation with intelligence. Perfect strangers. When they went shopping together, she would talk to the people in the line. We commit a criminal act if we accept something that is defective, a label that labels someone being defective, if we accept that and treat the individual like that. One of Mary Beck Reddy's students visited her. They were having a problem solving something, and in the early days she would let them come and visit her, and she would give them some advice on how to approach it. She wouldn't heal it for them. She wouldn't heal their patient or them for, you know. She would guide them on what they needed to do. And this one was a man, and she had such a spirituality about her that she was like Jesus when he was at that well, and he knew the background about that woman. That she'd been married so many times and such and whatever. He didn't have to even open his mouth. And she said, tell me what you do when you're walking out in public. You know, imagine being on a street and there's people all around and so forth. And the normal goings on of being in the city. He didn't know how to answer. He thought, why is she asking me this? So he hesitated long enough that she said, well, are you a Christian Scientist? In other words, he ought to be talking, right? He ought to be telling her what he did. He was doing nothing. He was just walking to wherever he was going to go. Mayor Baker Eddy says the difference between success and failure is often due to how we use our moments. And a moment is defined as the shortest amount of time. It is not defined by a number of seconds or anything else. It's defined by a word that says the shortest. Just like infinite is a word that means it never ends, no limit. So he had no answer. But then when she said, "Are you a Christian Scientist?" he had no choice. He had to tell her, "No, I'm not a Christian Scientist." It was a wake-up call. He realized that, yes, he should be doing something with his time and his vision and everything when he's walking in public. How about being alert to see if you can do the very first step in approaching out a heel? And that is to live a life of giving. If we're walking in public, are we alert to see how we can help someone that is in need? Might be someone that you walk by that's living on the street and sitting on the sidewalk. Maybe somebody's in a wheelchair. Maybe an accident happens. Maybe someone is begging for money, holding a hand out with a cup. Maybe someone looks like they got some really bad clothes, or maybe they don't look very well kept, dirty. If we're not observant and love everyone, there's no way we can love God. The Bible says we have to love the visible before we can love the invisible. God's not visible. Those people that think Jesus is God are not reading the Bible. A Pharisee asked Jesus. He said, "Good Master, how can I obtain eternal life?" If you've read that, you know what his answer was. He said, "Why call me good? There is none good but God." And then he went ahead and answered the question, how he could obtain eternal life. The Pharisee didn't like the answer. He went away very disappointed and probably angry. He was a wealthy man. He had everything money could buy, and now he wanted something more. He wanted eternal life. And when Jesus told him he needed to sell everything he had and give the proceeds to the poor, wow, that was just over the top. He wasn't interested in giving up anything he had, let alone everything, and then giving it to the people that are poor that needed it. If we don't live a life of giving, we better forget about Christian Science. Because Christian Science is living the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. If we are in need, would we like everyone to ignore us? I'm talking from a human standpoint. No. We don't want to be ignored if we're in need. We want someone to help us out. That's the human tendency. That's not a Christian Science tendency. That's a human tendency. If we're not willing to live the golden rule with everyone we see, everyone we know about, we're not ready to even begin to study about how to heal. We make it very clear on the website that is the first step you have to take. You have to nurture a life of giving. Giving. Now, we warn you about these big nonprofit organizations because they're all corrupt. The government The Department of Government Efficiency, headed up by the wealthiest man in the world, everyone knows who he is, and the President of the United States was delighted that he came on board and wanted to do this. Because we know it needed to be done. And he had expert programmers, the best money could buy. And he put together a team of about, I don't know, probably 25 or 30 people. And first of all, there was a request to the government to give them access to all of the financial records. Total blockage. They wouldn't give them anything. And the president making a demand got nowhere. So his programmers got to work. And within a few hours, they cracked the payment system of the federal government. And they discovered, after they did that, they discovered within about 2 hours where a huge amount of our taxpayer dollars were going. And it was going into something called USAID. U.S. for United States, AID for aid. It was supposed to be to help people that were in need all around the world. USAID. It was all a money laundering operation. They had nonprofit organization upon nonprofit organization upon nonprofit organization, all getting tax dollars in the billions of dollars. They would advertise that they were going to help children in this country or that country or wherever. Out of every $100, and I'm just keeping it simple, how much of the $100 you think was used on what they were advertising for? They have these ads all over the internet. The United Nations advertises for UNICEF. In fact, that's what UN means, United Nations. I, and then C is for children. UNI, I don't know what it is. Foundation, I think it is. Something for Children Foundation. Anyway, yeah. They say if you pay, in fact, I saw one just in the last couple of days. It says if you donate $5, you'll be able to buy a meal for a child. Are you kidding? A meal for a child, are you kidding? $5? It's probably 50 cents. Anyway, the point is that between 0 and 5% of every $100, in other words, between $1 and $5, out of every $100, was used on the purpose that they were advertising for. And what happened to the other 95 to 100%? It was a money laundering operation going back as a kickback to everybody that raised the money. Yeah. And that was true even with the Red Cross. Even with the Red Cross, the most that ever got spent was $5 out of every 100. And many of them had nothing that went to the purpose that was advertised for. Nothing. This is all public information. The man that was running the show, he thought it was so amazing that they were so fraudulent. I mean, we knew there was fraud and we knew there was waste, but I mean, the greed was so obvious. No wonder they wouldn't cooperate to let us get into the federal budget payment system. So anyway, he had a board meeting. I think there were around 30 people there. And he videoed the board meeting and put it up on the website. You know, the government website. We have it. We downloaded a copy of it. We put it up on our website, mbinstitute.org, so everybody could see what's going on. So don't give anything to a large nonprofit organization. Nothing. In fact, if you give money to anyone that is out of money, you're probably making a mistake. Because if they're out of money, it means they don't manage their money at all. What you want to do is you want to provide what they need. You know, if they need food, shelter, clothing, a job, transportation, provide money where you are buying the things and they receive the things, not the money. If you give them money, they can spend it on anything. Anything. It's not difficult to live a life of giving. If you do it anonymously, it will be one of the most rewarding things you've ever done in your life. Bar none. Think about birth. Think about being reborn. What does the apocalypse say? You know, Revelation, the last book in the Bible. It says, put off the old man and put on the new. Just like Joshua in that movie, Joshua. He went into this town, and there was a church that had burned down. And he got to work and started to take down the rest of the stuff and clear out the, you know, the old burned wood and everything. And the members of the church who had their church burned down, they came by and they saw him working and they said, what are you doing? He said, well, sometimes you have to take down and remove the old in order to make the new. This is in such bad condition, there's nothing left here. We just got to get rid of all the trash and build a new church. A beautiful movie. A lot of good things in that movie. On our website, we have a list of recommended movies. And that's one of them. Here's something that will really surprise you. Who do you think one of the most giving people in the world is? Well, he's been gone now for a long time. What, 45? Yeah. 57 years. Bruce Lee. If you haven't heard of him, he is a martial artist expert. Never been defeated. He is one of the most spiritual people that has walked on this earth. We have a lot of his videos. Highly recommend them. That's why we have them on there. It's under the title of Giving. Bruce Lee Giving. Check him out. You're going to be amazed. He was in one of the most potentially harmful sports, and yet he was one of the most spiritual people. And when you watch one of his videos, they're short ones, maybe 20, 30 minutes, you will see why that statement is said about him. He was always thinking about the well-being of his opponent. He never hit him. And he never let them hit him. He prevented the conflict before there could be any contact. He learned to anticipate exactly what their move was going to be a fraction of a second before they implemented it. And what would they hit? Open air. He wouldn't be there. He wouldn't be there. He spent his entire life educating himself about what the anticipation was going to be and so he would not be there. He fought with the best. He fought with all the champions. You have to see it. You have to see it to believe it. He had this one guy who was a 500-pound giant. There was a big sumo, you know, Japanese sumo wrestler champion. And the champion thought he would squash him in 10 seconds. He could never touch him. He was never there. Within a second, he might be behind him instead of in front of him. Anyway, we have a whole big section on the website on giving. And it's in our header, which means it's on every page, because our header is the same on every page of the website. So that no matter where you are, you can select what we feel are some of the most important things on the website. It doesn't matter what the claim is that is being made against an individual. If it's not godlike, it's unreal. It's a fake version of the truth. In fact, that's exactly what evil is. Evil is a deceitful decoy, like a magician that tries to get your attention somewhere besides where he's doing the magic. And then when your view goes back to where the magic is, you know, it's already done. So he's already done the trick when you weren't looking. That's what this is. That's what evil is. Evil works on deceit and decoys and disparaging character. That's what it is. That's how it operates. And we have to become an expert on how evil operates. Because we cannot practice the truth unless we know what its opposite is. That doesn't mean we read a medical dictionary. We don't do that at all. Because we don't want to embed in our thought, you know, 1,000 diseases. Frederick L. Rawson wrote a book, Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. In it are 1,315 problems with the solution to heal the problem. He mentions the problem in like one or two sentences. And he says what you need to do is deny the problem by saying there is no, and then you name the problem. And the rest of the treatment is on focusing on the truth, which is the opposite of the problem. No matter what the problem is, you have to start. Now, obviously, if it's an emergency, you're not going to be able to cultivate a life of giving before you can tend to the accident. The accident needs to be tended to immediately. I mean, if you're in a house that's burning, or an office or anything that's burning all around you, first thing you do is get out of there. And while you get out of there, you can be talking to yourself, claiming the truth as you're running. But you don't just sit there and pray while the fire engulfs you. No. Intelligence, remember, is a function of mind. We have to use intelligence with everything. With everything. The people that had that child, they had to utilize the opposite about every claim that was given to them. For example, balance is a function of principle. Oh, something else that's important. Before the child was born, it wasn't just the wife going in and, you know, I don't know, an hour or two later the child was born and they stay there for a day or something and then they both come home. No, it went on for like 2 weeks or more before either one of them could come out of the hospital. And they were in another state where they were. And so they called a practitioner. And he says the first thing you want to do is take notes on what they tell you. And the husband said, well, isn't that making a reality out of it? He said, no. He said, you want to just record it on a piece of paper, or don't believe it, but write it down. And he said, what's the purpose of that? And the practitioner said, you will find that very quickly after they tell you something, they will tell you the opposite. And that tells you that they're not dealing in a science. Because the science doesn't change. Facts don't change. Opinions change. And sure enough, that's what happened. They kept a record of what the father did. The wife was in the hospital. But, yeah, that's what they did. They wrote it down. The father wrote it down. And he was in constant touch with the practitioner. And that's exactly what happened. So, it convinced the husband that, well, yeah, I mean, this is the case. So, obviously, medicine, they had never relied on medicine anyway, because their upbringing was in Christian Science. And, but that gave them a practical experience where they could tell that that's exactly what was happening, that they're not giving the truth or it wouldn't change. That's why when Mary Baker Eddy reduced divine metaphysics to a system, everybody could practice it in the same way and get the same result. But you can't do that if you're not dealing with divine metaphysics and Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics. Because there you have a system. You know what to do. We have many prayer treatments where we give you details on this and that and the other so that you get the whole picture. We give you the whole system in great detail. The main thing you have to remember is that you need to live a life of giving, and you need to deny that there's any truth to any problem, no matter what the problem is. And then you have to know what the reverse is of the problem, and you have to claim that as the truth. And if you look at that book that has 15 different ailments in it, don't look at more than a couple. You know, if you've got a problem with something, just look at that. Don't read that chapter from beginning to end. The author recommends that you do not use that as reading from beginning to end, but you only use it as a reference. If you have a problem, you just go to that particular problem. And we have everything alphabetized on our website so that you can, you know, go to the alphabetical index and click on the A, B, C, or whatever, and it'll take you right to that page that has where that particular alphabetical letter begins, and you can, you know, you can scroll or you can type in a particular ailment and it'll take you right there. That's the way you want to treat it. Be specific. Keep your thoughts single. Know that there's no limitation. We give you a complete formula. On the home page, we have a link that has a title of Effective Healing. If you click on it, it will give you the complete presentation on how to proceed. But be prepared to start living a life of giving, because nothing is going to improve until you do. Look at anybody that was really successful. Jesus, Mary Baker Eddy, Wentworth Winslow, Frederick L. Rawson, Joel Goldsmith. Anybody that's been really effective in healing, they have a life of giving. The Bible says tithe 10%. Some people give away everything they don't need for their living expenses. It could be 70 or 80% of their total income, whatever it is. It's like a pianist. If he doesn't use his abilities, he's not a pianist. If you don't use your capability to give and be creative on how you give by really looking for solving a need and not just doing the easy thing and cutting a check. Well, today we don't use checks, but anyway. And if you throw coins into a cup, boy, that better be all you have in order to be doing coins, because even a $1 doesn't buy much. These guys look so pathetic that they have a cup out there. You should plan on spending 10% of your gross income before taxes, before deduction of anything. But don't do it by just giving money away. You better know the people and know what they're doing with the money and being able to see the results, or you're foolish to give money. You need to give what is needed. So look at the items that are needed, and not just generic by giving them money. Mary Baker Eddy, for many years, had a metaphysical college. And the final year of the college was in 1898. And she selected the students that were admitted to that class. And on the third day of the class, to give you an idea of how advanced they were, she assigned every single one to go out and perform a healing and come back and report on it the next morning at the next day's class. Every single one did. Every single one in the class did an instant healing. She gave that class 7 prayers. She titled them Diapason of Heaven. And there was one prayer for each of the 7 terms for God. And since this prayer treatment has been on the focus of mind, I shall recite to you the Diapason of Heaven prayer by Mary Baker Eddy on the topic of mind. If any further thought comes after I say mind at the conclusion of that prayer, I will add it to this recording. And it would be short. But sometimes a thought comes to me that would be good to add. So that will follow this prayer, if there is one that occurs. So here is the Diapason of Heaven with a focus on mind by Mary Baker Eddy. The real Christian Scientist is constantly accentuating harmony in word and deed, mentally and orally, perpetually repeating this Diapason of Heaven. Good is my God, and my God is good. Love is my God, and my God is love. We can declare often, divine mind is my mind, and my mind is God. God is my mind, and my mind is good. I have an intelligent mind, a good mind, a wise, perceptive, discerning mind, a clear mind, a joyous, happy mind. Mind is God, all acting, all wise, all loving, all knowing, all seeing. Divine mind is enthroned in my consciousness. Mortal mind and matter and personal sense are not enthroned. Ignorance and apathy and materiality are not enthroned in my consciousness. Good is my mind, and my mind is good. Mind is my God, and my mind is good. Divine mind is enthroned. This is the Word of God. We have to change the subjective thinking we have of these seven names from personal sense to spiritual sense, and see ourselves and others as spiritual individualities, not personalities. This way is the only way. It is the way the Bible characters walked with God and ascended. Amen. There are two thoughts that occurred. One is, we are very happy to have direct contact with any earnest seekers of truth. If you would like to have contact with us, please go to the contact page, which is at the bottom area of the menu, and it's also in the footer on the top left-hand corner of the footer, and that will tell you how to make contact with us. And when you give us your phone number, we're very happy to call. Please follow the instructions so that we can utilize the communication service that is in there. The second thought that occurred is that understanding the system is a very comprehensive thing, but basically it is like mathematics in that there are 10 digits in mathematics, and there are four operators of add, subtract, multiply, and divide, and you apply the operators to the digits to come up with a product. The system of divine metaphysics is very much the same. There are seven synonymous terms for God. There are four operators that are called the Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. And you apply those operators to the terms for God, and you come up with a product. And they work interactively with each other. So in other words, mind works with spirit, with soul, principle, and so forth. For example, a quality of mind is intelligence. You need to utilize intelligence with determining what real substance is, what real identity is, which is soul, what principle is all about, which is system, which is structure, and balance, and harmony, and what life is all about, and truth, and love. And the same way with all of the other terms that are utilized to define mind. And there's roughly 300, in fact, there's exactly 350 terms that Mary Baker Eddy uses in the textbook to define the seven different terms. So it's approximately 50 terms, 50 words that define mind, 50, another 50 that define soul, spirit, soul, and so forth. So it is interacting and seeing the network, how these words work with each other in order to reverse any ailment that one may experience. And repetition is very important because we have been taught, unless you're very rare, you've been influenced by universal thought and meant to believe that matter is what is real substance, and that the brain is what should be utilized for intelligence. So everything about Christian Science is the opposite. We use what Jesus used. We use what Mary Baker Eddy used, and what these other people that were able to do instantaneous healing. And we teach all about it. And as mentioned just a moment ago, if you contact us with any questions you have about the Bible, Science and Health, or any of the other 16 books that Mary Baker Eddy wrote, anything about the system of divine metaphysics, anything at all that is related to our purpose in being here, which is to assist mankind to free themselves from the shackles of materiality and get on the path of truth, or if you're already on the path of truth, to advance more rapidly than what you'd be able to do otherwise, we're here to help. The title to this was Mind Reveals Individuality of Man. And we gave you an example of a very extreme case of a label put on someone and how the parents, with the help of practitioners, were able to overcome every single problem. There's no limit to what can be healed. The only limit is within one's own thought that they place on it, or don't release old thoughts or beliefs about what they think is going to control their life or the life of one of their loved ones. It is April 22, Wednesday, and it's 2026, and it's 14:31. Thank you for listening. The end.